A gunshot cracks through the air. Agent Tim McCarthy doesn't duck. He spreads his arms wide and turns toward the shooter, making his body a human shield. The bullet tears into his midsection as President Reagan crumples into the limousine. This is the Secret Service at its finest, instant, selfless action in the face of death. Yet decades later, a Delta Force Sergeant Major would deliver a crushing verdict to counter-assault team member Brad Gable. The service has really let you down. You'll never be able to stop a real attack. How did an agency built on such extraordinary courage become what insiders now call a paper tiger? The truth is uncomfortable. Behind the sunglasses and earpieces lies an organization crippled by leadership failures, budget constraints, and a culture that rewards loyalty over competence. Through hundreds of interviews with agents, directors, and presidents, a disturbing pattern emerges. The Secret Service learns only through bloodshed, implementing reforms after assassinations rather than preventing them. November 22, 1963 should have been routine. Instead, it became the day that exposed just how vulnerable American presidents really were. The Secret Service protecting Kennedy resembled a modest city police force more than an elite protective unit. Just 34 agents assigned to the White House detail, no specialized training program, and protocols learned through informal mentoring rather than rigorous instruction. Kennedy himself had stacked the odds against his protectors. His frenetic travel schedule forced agents to work double shifts with minimal rest, while he regularly ordered them to keep their distance during public appearances. He couldn't get elected dog catcher if he didn't mingle with crowds, agents recalled him saying. The night before the assassination, 9 agents, including 4 scheduled for early morning duty, stayed out drinking until 5 a.m., violating regulations routinely ignored throughout the service. When the shots rang out, only Clint Hill recognized what was happening. He sprinted toward the limousine as a third bullet exploded Kennedy's skull, clinging to the accelerating vehicle and pressing Mrs. Kennedy back into her seat while shielding the couple with his body. Looking down at the catastrophic head wound, Hill gave his teammates a thumbs down. The unthinkable had happened, and the world would never be the same. James Rowley stood at Andrews Air Force Base as Air Force One returned with Kennedy's body. A president had died on his watch. Rather than succumb to despair, he transformed tragedy into action. Rowley documented everything, then began rebuilding immediately. He nearly doubled the White House detail, borrowed 670 FBI agents for motorcades, and mandated checks of all buildings along presidential routes. Working with IBM, he modernized the outdated paper-based threat tracking system. When the Warren Commission criticized the service's seriously deficient methods, Rowley refused to scapegoat agents. By fall 1965, the service began hiring over 200 new agents. As veteran Larry Newman observed, "We got a new training center. We got new agents. Unfortunately, we had to lose a president for Congress to wake up." March 30, 1981 seemed routine until John Hinckley fired 6 shots outside the Washington Hilton. Tim McCarthy spread his body wide, taking a bullet to shield Reagan. Jerry Parr shoved the president into the limousine. Reagan had a bullet lodged in his lung and had lost nearly half his blood volume. Nancy Reagan's response was fierce. "Give the Secret Service whatever they need. This will never happen again." Yet the pattern was troubling. The service only learned through crisis. After Kennedy, they eliminated open-top limousines. After Wallace's shooting, they improved rope line protocols. After Reagan, they implemented metal detectors. The agency was born of blood, always reactive rather than proactive. The Clinton years revealed how personal indiscretions create security vulnerabilities. Agents discovered the president would jog to the YMCA where there's a woman in there waiting for him. The Monica Lewinsky scandal forced unprecedented legal challenges when independent counsel Kenneth Starr subpoenaed agents to testify. Director Louis Merletti warned that presidents would distance themselves if agents might later testify, but courts rejected this executive protection privilege. More troubling was corruption at the service's highest levels. Director Brian Stafford and senior leaders had affairs with White House staffers, security protocol violations that made them vulnerable to blackmail. The agency demanding absolute integrity was led by men who modeled the opposite, even promoting supervisors recently implicated in pornography scandals to oversee misconduct investigations. The wheels-up, rings-off culture compromised credibility, exposed presidents to unnecessary risks, and created exploitable vulnerabilities that undermined the trust essential to effective protection. September 11, 2001, exposed critical Secret Service failures. President Bush remained in a publicly broadcast Sarasota classroom for 30 minutes after the attacks began. The White House evacuation descended into chaos. Vice President Cheney's detail lacked proper bunker access, leaving him exposed when American 77 struck the Pentagon. Agents defended the White House roof with rifles against aircraft, a woefully inadequate response. The service immediately fortified perimeters and established that future attacks would trigger immediate presidential evacuation, yet new challenges emerged. Barack Obama's historic candidacy drew unprecedented threats, 30 per day after his election, four times previous presidents. On November 11, 2011, Oscar Ortega Hernandez fired a semi-automatic rifle at the White House. Seven bullets struck the residence while Sasha Obama was inside. Leadership downplayed the incident and failed to inform the first family. Michelle Obama learned about the assassination attempt from a housekeeper. The incident revealed dangerous institutional complacency. Leaders prioritized avoiding embarrassment over acknowledging serious security breaches. In April 2012, the Secret Service faced its most embarrassing modern scandal when agents were caught drinking heavily and hiring prostitutes during a presidential trip to Cartagena, Colombia. Dave Cheney, a 21-year veteran, had emailed his 54-person team with the motto, "Una más cerveza, por favor," setting the tone for what many saw as deserved downtime. When one woman wasn't paid her agreed-upon fee, she created a scene involving local police, triggering an international incident. Director Sullivan concealed significant information while battling criticism from agents who admitted to similar misconduct in El Salvador and Panama. The wheels-up, rings-off culture was real, despite Sullivan's denials. Julia Pearson became the first female director in March 2013, inheriting an agency in crisis. On her second day, she bluntly declared bankruptcy. They were critically understaffed with over 600 unfilled positions. The final blow came on September 19, 2014, when Omar Gonzalez scaled the White House fence and made it deep into the mansion before being tackled. At a congressional hearing, Pearson's testimony was undermined by a bombshell. Days earlier, an armed security guard with a criminal record had been allowed in an elevator with President Obama, a breach she'd allegedly tried to conceal. She resigned after just 19 months, revealing an agency where institutional dysfunction had become normalized. Trump's presidency exposed the service's breaking point. His family's arrangements, frequent Mar-a-Lago weekends, and protection for 18 relatives demanded a $60 million budget increase. In his first months, Trump golfed 26 of 30 weekends while his family made roughly 650 out-of-town trips, 12 times Obama's rate. The service became politicized when Trump tweeted his guards were eager to attack protesters with the most vicious dogs. One agent protested, "We're not some brown shirt brigade here to do his bidding. We are here to protect democracy." On January 6, 2021, Trump's rhetoric incited supporters to breach the Capitol, endangering Pence and his detail. Afterward, some service personnel defended the rioters on social media, calling them patriots. Biden's transition team requested changes to Trump's detail, an unprecedented move revealing how deeply politics had corrupted the agency. Despite individual agents' dedication, systemic problems persist. Outdated technology, insufficient resources, and unclear mission parameters leave the service dangerously stretched. The promotion system resembles organized crime. Agents speak of being made when winning their first major promotion. As one Trump official warned, "Someone needs to sit down and figure out what is their mission, because they can't do the mission they have now." From Clint Hill racing toward Kennedy's limousine to Tim McCarthy spreading his arms wide, these agents deserve better than an agency that sets them up to fail.